Heyo, welcome everybody to another edition of the obligatory Keystone crossover. I'm your fake host, Chris Bucanani of the obligatory PSU pregame show, joined by Jim Galante of the Keystone Sports Network. If you have not already, I strongly encourage you to subscribe to the Keystone Kickoff Show podcast, which you can find wherever you got this podcast. Just type it into your search bar, you'll find it. There's more details at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com on where you can get the podcast or hear it on your local radio station throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And you can, of course, go to the App Store or Google Play platform of your choice and download the Keystone Sports app, which is the easiest way to get the update from their podcast, from Obligatory, from For the Bloggy, and a lot more good stuff coming down the pike. So, Jim, we always take one topic today and we kick it around. And you had, I think, an interesting angle on one of the new and critically important sources of talent, which is the, as has been said so many times, it's cliche, the lifeblood of college football. Typically, we're talking recruiting, but now we're talking about the de facto free agency of the transfer portal.
And Chris, you're right. The transfer portal, best described, it's free agency in college football. And I believe we've talked about
with
it.
No salary cap.
Exactly. That's a good point. And we've been talking, and a lot of folks have been talking, transfer portal in terms of, is it right or is it wrong? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Right. It's here to stay. And as an old guy, it reminds me so much of this free agency in professional sports, specifically baseball. When that first came out, everybody was up in arms. What's going to happen to the game? It's going to be the end of baseball as we know it. Well, guess what? Everyone adjusted to it. There were teams that were good at it. There were teams that are bad at it. And we didn't have a situation where the Yankees won every World Series for the last 25 years because they threw around money to the wrong player. And I realize, you know, I'll stay away from the money analogy. But the transfer portal is here to stay. And my question of the day is, as in everything else which changes, there's winners and there's losers. And who are those winners and losers? You know, first up, the players, first pass, you think automatically, they're winners because this gives them the freedom that they never had before. They could transfer without having to sit out a year. And I don't think there's any doubt that overall they are winners in this. But be careful what you wish for sometimes. There's a lot of players who are entering the portal, Chris, who never get out of the portal. They think the grass is greener on the other side, but guess what? Sometimes it isn't.
Or, you know, like Rico in the Dr. Pepper commercials, they disappear into the portal, and on one end, they're recruits at a Power 5 program with a chance to get an undergraduate degree from a land-grant school, and they come out on the other end, and all of a sudden, you know, they're in an FCS program, or they're at a Group of Five school. And, look, everyone's situation is different. But if you are a high school football player, the next level you aspire to is to play and start for a Power 5 program. And the math just hasn't worked out for a lot of these kids.
Exactly, it hasn't. And partially, you got to say to the players, are you going to be smart with your decision? Mm-hmm. Two instances that I've talked about on our regular show are Noah Kane and Daniel George, and I'm sure it came off to some people that I was being critical of them. They both chose to enter the portal. Noah Kane has already found another home, but guess what? He's sticking around at Penn State this semester. He waited to announce his transfer till the semester started. So guess what? He's going to finish the semester at Penn State and get his degree. So no matter what happens on the next leg of his journey, he's got his degree. Daniel George did the same thing. His plan is to finish out the spring semester at Penn State. He'll have his degree. again, there's a lot of players who haven't been smart enough to do that, and they end up, like you said, in limbo somewhere, not getting that degree, say at Penn State, and they go off somewhere and maybe don't even arrive at the next place. So for players, it's definitely, I think, I'll tilt it to it's a win for players, but they need to be careful with it. The next group you got to look at, Chris, are the individual teams themselves. And you have some examples of teams who are already winners. Michigan State, Mel Tucker built that team last year on the portal.
Yeah, and number one example.
To do it again this year.
Number one example, of at least in the short lifespan of the transfer portal, they are exhibit A for success. I agree.
Exactly. Now, Clemson, for example, their coach, Dabo Sweeney, isn't crazy about the portal. He doesn't want to use the portal. He had a pretty porous offensive line this past year. He could have really used some help, but he's philosophically against it. Now, will he adjust? I suspect he will, but there are teams like that. And then you have some other schools. I'm not sure whether to call them winners or losers, but they're very active. I think of Lincoln Riley, by the way, as ground zero for quarterbacks in the portal. You look at Oklahoma, they lost Spencer Rattler, are going to lose Caleb Williams. They brought in Dylan Gabriel, not even to mention Micah Bowens, who got there a couple years ago. Lincoln Riley goes to USC. He loses Keaton Slovis to Pitt. And the next, the heir apparent there is Jackson Dart. He's in the portal. So, and just to add to it, Caleb Williams from Oklahoma, many people think he will end up at USC. My head is spinning already with Lincoln Riley, but I'm not sure if he and his teams, we should call them winners or losers in all of this. We probably won't know for another year or two. But it leads me to my question for you, Chris. So there's some examples that are pretty obvious of winners and losers. What about Penn State? Winner or loser so far with the transfer portal?
It's a good question, Jim, and a good topic. So earlier when I alluded to the short lifespan of the portal, part of the question of who's going to be a winner or a loser is going to take a little bit more time to judge in the long term. Like we saw Michigan State have, you know, something of an outlier season, certainly based on the last couple of years and what you could have expected from Sparty based on where they were prior to bringing in all the transfer portal talent. I do think there's a dangerous tightrope there, though, because if you have one of those great years that then spikes expectations and you don't make the same kind of contact the following season, if you're again depending on transfers to bolster your roster, as it appears Mel Tucker is, then, you know, you can work yourself into a real jam in terms of fan and booster goodwill and support for your program if you construct something of a mirage in terms of where the state of your program is and what are realistic expectations, especially if you have a $100 million contract based entirely on that, Jim. And so there's very high stakes for Michigan State to be able to repeat the magic they had from the transfer portal next season. And I think the likelihood of doing that is much lower, right? Like the good thing about the transfer portal is that if you play it correctly, you can have a one or even a two season fix based on the talent you bring in. I do think it is potentially less sustainable for a variety of reasons than trying to build a consistent base in the recruiting market, which is your other source of college talent. So to relate that back to Penn State, if I'm picking short-term winners, I have to give James Franklin and his staff the W for 2021. Because as underwhelming as the results were on the field this year, can you imagine how bad they would have been if we didn't have the guys we brought in through the transfer portal, imagine our pass rush without A.K.A. Ibukete.
Could I play devil's advocate here for you with the second?
Sure.
For a second. How different would this team look if Will Levis were still on the team?
That's a fair point. Here's the thing with backup quarterbacks leaving via the transfer portal. We've always seen backup quarterbacks leave, right? Like, you know, that's happened throughout the history of college football, probably most infamously at Penn State when you had Todd Blackledge and Jeff Hostetler in the same recruiting class. So when I see a backup who's probably not going to get a chance to play, Pat Devlin is another great example. That was happening prior to the institution of the transfer portal. Backups who were blocked from a starting job have been leaving Penn State and other schools throughout the history of college football. So that's a position where I don't view attrition by the backup as directly connected to the portal. The ability to just pluck talent, plug it in, and not have to worry about going through the farcical NCAA waiver process to have the player available immediately versus take the 1 year off, I think that's far more impactful at all the other positions across the roster. And I think it was for Penn State. So again, I give Penn State the W, and I guess I give them a little bit of an incomplete going forward, because we have to see how much time and effort and resources are committed to it. If I'm grading what I've seen so far from Penn State this offseason, I love the Tinsley signing, although it does feel like more of a luxury than a necessity. And at the positions of necessity, specifically linebacker and to a just slightly lesser extent offensive line, there's nothing to show for it. So again, hitting 1 year and having better results than you would have otherwise is great. But if you can't commit to it consistently, then I'm not sure it's worth all that much. And of course, places like Clemson are going to hate it, because just like the power programs, Penn State included, got hit hard when the NCAA reduced the scholarship cap down to 85. Once again, the schools that have been most successful at stockpiling talent are going to become chum in the water for all the other places with starting jobs to offer the second and third guy on the Clemsons of the world's depth charts.
Let me ask you this, Chris. I mentioned Clemson, and there seemed to be a reluctance by Dabo Sweeney in going to the transfer portal. My take on James Franklin with the transfer portal is he's okay with it. He understands it's part of the game, but he has also already stated what he's uncomfortable with is there are players, they're already committed before they enter the portal. They already know where they're going.
Yep.
Meanwhile, it seems like James Franklin has this, and it sounds like a solid way to go, I'm going to really check out these players just like I do high school recruits, background. We'll go through the courting process, make sure that there's a cultural fit. Do they risk taking too much time worrying about the culture fit and everything else, and by then the transfer portal players they're interested in, they're already gone? Is he going to have to adjust a bit to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You're just going to have to do more pre-work that, just like with the high school recruiting process, will largely go for naught, because the number of guys you put time on who don't commit to your school vastly outnumber those who actually end up playing meaningful snaps for you or even signing a letter of intent, right? So I do think there is a danger, in my opinion, of perceiving the transfer portal as just sort of the rump end of roster management and just kind of allocating your resources commensurate with that. I don't know. It's not 50-50, but it's far closer to an even balance than it is like an 85-15 or a 90-10 split between high school and the transfer portal. We're all about spend more money, spend more money, spend more money, because dollars equal wins in college football and at Penn State. While a place that to me would be far more impactful than some of these facility upgrades would be investing more in really killing the transfer portal every single offseason. And again, I talked about that on a previous show about a month or so ago. A lot of that is committing staff resources to following the ones who got away and keeping in contact with intermediaries. And if not outright coaxing some of your guys who you felt good about in the recruiting process, who aren't getting a ton of PT at the school they chose, to come to the portal, at the very least, gauging whether or not they might be looking around and trying to, pave the way to make a good recruiting pitch to them when they are finally able to be talked with directly.
There's no doubt, Chris, when you have these players who are, they announce they're in the portal and the next day they have their destination already selected, you know things are going on in the background. Again, I'll use Noah Cain as an example. I suspect he's known for weeks and weeks he was transferring, and I think he also knew he had to stick around at Penn State for the semester to begin for him to get this semester paid for under his scholarship.
Yeah.
But I am confident that in those 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it was, there were back channel discussions already being done with LSU and perhaps other schools.
Sure.
I'm not saying anybody was doing anything illegal, but I don't think right now the NCAA is cracking down on this. So, yes, you've got to be proactive. And, you know, I'm painting a scenario now. I don't want to say anyone should be cheating, but when you're bringing in a coach like Manny Diaz, who was at Miami, who recruited very much the state of Florida, you know, Penn State needs linebackers. Manny Diaz is the linebacker coach. You know, over the last several years, he's talked to a lot of kids that either went to Miami, considered going to Miami, which means they know him very well, have talked about playing for Manny Diaz. Now, Diaz can't go to a kid that's in playing for Florida State right now, but he could talk to that kid's high school coach and say, hey, coach, how's John Smith doing over at Florida State? Still happy there?
Mm-hmm.
Just as an aside, at Penn State, you know, we have a real need for a linebacker who has a lot of those same skills that he has. You know, how active are they in doing that type of thing? And because it's new, I'm not sure everybody is that comfortable with it, but you know that is what's going on, Chris.
Yeah, you got to jump on it. And to that point, I sound like a broken record, but I don't know. Again, I guess I'm trying to speak this into existence. You need a staff person who is essentially like the Jonah Hill character from Moneyball, who is, you know, a colleague or a subordinate, whatever, of Andy Frank, the recruiting coordinator. And his entire job is to focus on nothing but that. That's the person who is responsible for being in Manny Diaz's ear the moment he puts ink to contract. Hey, coach, can I get 20, 30 minutes of your time? I'd like to sit and go over our roster situation with you and what your network of contacts in state and from your recruiting past can do for us in the transfer portal. Here's a list of players who we think are potential targets. Can you help me augment this? What can we do to support you? That infrastructure needs to be in place because I think it is only going to continue to grow in importance as part of your overall roster management.
I couldn't agree with you more on that, Chris. There has to be a commitment to it. And again, as you stated earlier, this isn't how you're going to build your program. This isn't going to be the foundation of the program. But you've got to be able to identify your weaknesses, and you hit it. Offensive line, linebacker, there are holes there that they need to fill. I wouldn't mind, you know, a good defensive lineman somewhere, that's fine. But give me an offensive lineman or two and a linebacker or two. I think they really need it.
And to my point from the beginning, it's going to be different for every kid. for a lot of these guys, playing time is so important and so precious, which is totally understandable, that they'll be completely comfortable with dropping down a level, so to speak, if they're going to get reps. You know, if you can get on the field and catch balls or make tackles or whatever for Akron, like, yeah, it ain't running out of the tunnel at Beaver Stadium, but you signed up to play football, not sit the bench. So if you just happen to be somebody who got surpassed by other guys on the roster or got a Penn State offer and it turns out you might be a good football player but not a great one, which is what you need to do to be able to play at the top level of the Power Five, it's beneficial to those players to be able to drop down and get those opportunities. But to your point about how it's not how you're going to build your program, every recruiting class going back decades has had those kids you were sure about and you just whiffed on them. You thought, I believe this kid can play at Penn State, and it turns out for whatever reason he couldn't, or he won't, or you don't want him to. And the path is easier, and I think this is a net positive for those guys to find better fits elsewhere far more easily. But that means that your roster management journey only begins with National Letter of Intent Day. And so it's not a way you are going to build your program over the long haul if you're dependent on it. But I do think it is going to become essential to sustaining program success. I really believe that, because you're going to have to find a way to replace the inevitable attrition, which is going to be higher than ever, out of each one of your recruiting classes. And to your point about winning, theoretically, if you do it well, it'll be a net positive for your program, because you will replace guys you didn't feel good about playing for you with ones you're far more confident can come in and make a contribution.
Yep. My final thought is, you could, each team could determine whether they're the winner or loser in this game of free agency. And it's up to James Franklin and his staff to make the decision that they want to do it and do it correctly to plug their holes.
Good topic, Jim. Again, for me, the measure of success is going to be getting back to double-digit wins. And if you bring in guys who make a noticeable contribution on a team that wins 10 or more games, that means you're winning. That's as simple a metric as you're going to get. So thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. The obligatory Keystone crossover. Always have a good time chatting with Jim. Hope you enjoy these little interludes. Again, if you like these conversations, three times a week, 52 weeks a year, recruiting news, Penn State talk, anything you need to fill your blue and white fix during the offseason, the Keystone Kickoff Show on the Keystone Sports Network is the way to go. Some nice new additions recently. They have a weekly Rivals recruiting update. They've added our good buddy Nathan Wilmot, the analytical stats guru from ForTheBloggy.com. Nate and I are working on some interesting stuff we're going to have published over the offseason, and he's going to join Jim once a week on Mondays to give you a little perspective on how the numbers stack up for Penn State and put that in the context of college football. So lots of good stuff. Best way to keep up with it is subscribe to the podcast, Keystone Kickoff. Look it up wherever you get your podcasts. Until we talk to you next, take care of yourselves and each other. We are.
We're excited to be partnering with the team at Keystone Sports, more folks who love the Nittany Lions like we do. You can hear the Keystone Kickoff Show three times a week on the airwaves across Pennsylvania. Go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com for a list of radio stations and more, or listen whenever you want by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. But your best bet is to download the Keystone Sports app, available in the App Store and Google Play.